Chapter 8, Shadow Warriors. The effort of producing sounds twisted the Shadow Warriors' already striking face, green skin, scarlet lips, white striped cheeks, etc., into dreadful, contorted shapes. Go, 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 he gurgled. Cuff, cuff, ka, he coughed. Eh? What's that? What's the fellow saying? Demanded Prince Bolo loudly. Can't make out a single word. What a poser, I swear, Blabbermouth hissed at Haroon. Our Bolo, talking so big and rude because he thinks it'll stop us from noticing that he's scared out of his pants. Haroon wondered why Blabbermouth remained in Prince Bolo's service when she had such a low opinion of the gentleman. But he kept his mouth shut, partly because he didn't want her to say something cutting and scornful to him, partly because he had started to like her a good deal, which made any opinion of hers okay with him. But mostly because there was a giant shadow with a huge sword looming over them and a warrior grunting and spitting at them from a few feet away. And in short, this was no time for chit-chat. If, as it is said, people in the land of Choop hardly talk at all these days because of the cult master's decrees, then it is not surprising that this warrior has temporarily lost control of his voice, Rashid Khalifa was explaining to Prince Bolo, who was unimpressed. It's too bad, really. It's too bad, he said. Really, why can't people speak properly? It beats me. The Shadow Warrior, ignoring the prince, made further rapid hand gestures at Rashid and managed to croak out a few words. Murder, it said. Spark a new ear. So it's murder he plans, cried Bolo, putting his hand upon the hilt of his sword. Well, he won't have it all his own way, I promise him that. Bolo, said General Katab, dash it all, will you be quiet? Spots and fogs, this warrior is trying to tell us something. The Shadow Warrior's hand movements became agitated and a little desperate. He twiddled his fingers into different positions, held his hands at different angles, pointed at different parts of his body, and repeated hoarsely, murder, murder, spark abi no here. Rashid Khalifa smacked his forehead. I got it, he exclaimed. What a fool I am. He's been talking to us fluently all this time. Don't be ridiculous, Prince Bolo put in. You call those grunts fluency? It's the hand movements, Rashid answered, showing considerable restraint at Bolo's burblings. He has been using the language of gesture. As for what he said, it wasn't murder, but Mudra. That's his name. He's been trying to introduce himself. Mudra. Speak Abhinaya. That's what he's been saying. Abhinaya is the name of the most ancient gesture language of all. Which, it just so happens, I know. Mudra and his shadow instantly began nodding furiously. Now the shadow sheathed its sword, too, and began to use gesture language as rapidly as Mudra himself, so that Rashid was obliged to plead, hang on one at a time, please, and slowly, I have done this for a long time, and you're going too fast for me. After a few moments of listening to the hands of Mudra and his shadow, Rashid turned to General Katab and Prince Bolo with a smile. Nothing to worry about, he said. Mudra is a friend. Also, this is a lucky meeting, for we have here none other than the Choopwala, than the champion warrior of Choop, considered by most Choopwalas to be second in authority only to Cultmaster Khatam Shud himself. If he's Khatam Shud's number two man, Prince Bolo exclaimed, then we really are in luck. Let's seize him and put him in chains and tell the cult master we'll only release him if we get back batshit safe and sound. And how do you propose to capture him? General Katab mildly asked. I do not think he wishes to be captured, you know. Humph. Please listen, Rashid urged. Mudra is no longer an ally of the cult masters. He has become disgusted with the growing cruelty and fanaticism of the cult of the tongueless ice idol Bezaban, and has broken off relations with Khatam Shud. He came here to this twilight wilderness to think out what he should do next. If you wish, I can interpret his Abhinaya for you. General Katab nodded, and Mudra began to speak. Haroon noticed that the language of gesture involved more than just the hands. The position of the feet was important, too, and the eye movements as well. In addition, Mudra possessed a phenomenal degree of control over each and every muscle in his green painted face. He could make bits of his face twitch and ripple in the most remarkable way. And this, too, was a part of his speaking, his Abhinaya. Don't think all Chupwalos follow Khatam Shud or worship his Beziban, Mudra said in his silent, dancing way, and Rashid translated his words into ordinary speech. Mostly, they are simply terrified of the cult master's great powers of sorcery. But if he were defeated, most people in Chup would turn to me. And through my shadow, and though my shadow and I are warriors, we are both in favor of peace. Now it was the shadow's turn to speak. You must understand that in the land of Chup, shadows are considered the equals of the people to whom they are joined, it began, with Rashid translating again. Chupwalas live in the dark, you know, and in the dark, a shadow doesn't have to be one single shape all the time. Some shadows, such as my good self, learn how to change ourselves simply by wishing to do so. Imagine the advantages. If a shadow doesn't care for the clothes sense or hairstyle of the person to whom it's attached, it can simply choose a style for itself. A Chupwala's shadow can be as graceful as a dancer, even if its owner is as clumsy as an oaf. You comprehend? What's more, in the land of Chup, a shadow is very often has a stronger personality than the person or self or substance to whom or to which it is joined. So often the shadow leads, and it is the person or self or substance that follows. And of course, there can be quarrels between the shadow and the substance or self or person. They can pull in opposite directions. How often I have witnessed that. But just as often, there is a true partnership and a mutual respect. So peace with the Chupwalas means peace with their shadows, too. And among the shadows, also, cult master Khatam Shud has made terrible trouble. Mudra, the shadow warrior, resumed the narrative. Quicker and quicker moved his hands, and his facial muscles rippled and twitched in a most excited way, and his legs danced nimbly and fast. Rashid had to work very hard to keep up with him. Khatam Shud's black magic has had some fearsome results, Mudra revealed. He has plunged so deeply into the dark art of sorcery that he has become shadowy himself. Changeable, dark, more like a shadow than a person. And as he has become more shadowy, so his shadow has become more like a person. And the point has come at which it's no longer possible to tell which is Khatam Shud's shadow and which is his substantial self. Because he has done what no other Chupwala has ever dreamt of, that is, he has separated himself from his shadow. He goes about in the darkness, entirely shadowless, and his shadow goes wherever it wishes. The cult master, Khatam Shud, can be in two places at once. At this point, Blabbermouth, who had been gazing at the shadow warrior with something very like adoration or devotion, bursts out, "But that's the worst news in the world. It was going to be almost impossible to defeat him once, and now you tell us we'll have to beat him twice?" "Precisely so," said the grim gestures of Mudra's shadow. "Furthermore, this new doubled Khatam Shud, this man-shadow and shadow-man, has a very harmful effect on the friendships between Chupwalas and their shadows. Now, many shadows are resentful of being joined to Chupwalas at their feet, and there are many quarrels. It is a sad time," Mudra's gestures continued, "when a Chupwala cannot even trust his own shadow." A silence fell as General Khattab and Prince Bolo mulled over everything that Mudra and his shadow had said. Then Prince Bolo burst out. "Why should we believe this creature? Hasn't he admitted he's a traitor to his own leader? Must we do business with traitors now? How do we know this isn't more of his treason, some deep-laid plan, some sort of trap?" Now, General Khattab, as Harun had observed, was, as a rule, the mildest of men, who liked nothing so much as a good argument. But on this occasion, he went pink in the face and seemed to swell up slightly. "Hang it all, Your Highness," he finally said. "I'm in command here. Hold your tongue or you'll be on the way back to Gup City and someone else will have to rescue your batsheet on your behalf. And you wouldn't like that, I'd guess, Spots and Fogs, you wouldn't." Blabbermouth looked delighted at this reprimand. Bolo looked murderous, but held his tongue. Which was just as well, because Mudra's shadow had responded to Bolo's outburst by going into a positive frenzy of changes, growing enormous, scratching itself all over, turning into a silhouette of flame-breathing dragon, and then into other creatures, a griffin, a basilink, a manticore, a troll. And while the shadow behaved in this agitated fashion, Mudra himself retreated a few steps, leant on a tree stump, and pretended to have grown very bored indeed, examining his fingernails, yawning, twiddling his thumbs. "This warrior and his shadow are a fine team," Harun thought. "They put on opposite acts, so nobody knows what they really feel, which may, of course, be a third thing completely." General Katab approached Mudra with great, even exaggerated respect. "Blow it all, Mudra. Will you help us? It isn't going to be easy in the darkness of Choop. We could do with a fellow like you, mighty warrior and all that. What do you say?" Prince Bolo sulked at the edge of the clearing while Mudra paced and thought. Then he began to gesture once again. Rashid translated his words. "Yes, I will help," the shadow warrior said, "for the cult master must surely be defeated. But there is a decision you must make." "I bet I know what it is," Blabbermouth hissed at Harun. "It's the same one that should have been made before we even set out. What do we say first? Batsheet or the ocean? By the way," she added, blushing slightly, "isn't he something? Isn't he wicked, awesome, sharp? Mudra, I mean." "I know who you mean," said Harun, with a pang of what might have been jealousy. "He's okay, I suppose." "Okay?" hissed Blabbermouth. "Only okay? How can you even say..." But here she broke off because Mudra's words were being translated by Rashid. "As I told you, there are now two Khatam Shuds. One of them at this very moment has Princess Batsheet captive in the Citadel of Choop and is planning to sew up her lips on the Feast of Bezaban. The other, as you should know, is in the Old Zone, where he is plotting the ruination of the ocean of the Streams of Story." An immense stubbornness came over Prince Bolo of Gup. "Say what you will, General," he cried, "but a person must come before the ocean, no matter how great the peril to both. It must be Batsheet first. Batsheet, my love, my only girl, her cherry lips must be saved from the cultmaster's needle, and without further delay. What are you people? Have you not blood in your veins? General, and you too, Sir Mudra, are you men or shadows?" "There is no need to insult shadows any further," Mudra's shadow gestured with great dignity. Bolo ignored it. "Very well," General Katab agreed. "Rot it all, very well. But we must send someone to investigate the Old Zone situation." "But whom?" "Oh, now let me see." "Humph." It was in this instant that Harun cleared his throat. "I'll go," he volunteered. All eyes turned to stare at him as he stood there in his red nightshirt with the purple patches, feeling fairly ridiculous. "Hmm? What's that you say?" Prince Bolo irritably demanded. "Once you thought my father was spying for Khatam Shud against you," Harun said. "Now, if you and the general wish, I'll spy for you upon Khatam Shud, or his shadow, whichever one of them is down there in the Old Zone, poisoning the ocean." "And why, Stap and Blasphemy, do you volunteer for this dangerous job?" General Katab wanted to know. "Good question," Harun thought. "I must be a very great fool." But what he said aloud was this. "Well, sir, it's like this. All my life I've heard about the wonderful sea of stories and water genies and everything. But I started believing only when I saw If in my bathroom the other night. And now I've actually come to Kahani and seen with my own eyes how beautiful the ocean is, with its story streams and colors whose names I don't even know, and its floating gardeners and plenty more fishes and all. Well, it turns out I may be too late, because the whole ocean's going to be dead any minute if we don't do something. And it turns out that I don't like the idea of that, sir, not one bit. I don't like the idea that all the good stories in the world will go wrong forever and ever, or just die. As I say, I only just started believing in the ocean. But maybe it isn't too late for me to do my bit. There, he thought. You've really done it now, made yourself look like a complete idiot. But Blabbermouth was looking at him in much the same way she'd been staring at Mudra for some time. And that was pleasant. It couldn't be denied. And then he caught sight of his father's expression, and, oh no, he thought, I know exactly what he's going to say. There's more to you, young Harun Khalifa, than meets the blinking eye, said Rashid. Forget it, mumbled Harun furiously. Forget I even spoke. Prince Bolo strode over and thumped Harun on the back, leaving him winded. Out of the question, Bolo was shouting. Forget you spoke, young man, it will never be forgotten. General, I ask you, is this not the perfect fellow for the job? For he is, like me, a slave to love. Here Harun avoided looking at Blabbermouth and blushed. Yes, indeed, Prince Bolo continued, striding about and waving his arms in a dashing and somewhat foolish way. Just as my great passion, my amour, leads me to Batsheet. Always towards Batsheet. So this boy's destiny is to rescue what he loves, that is, the ocean of stories. Very well, General Khattab gave in. Young Master Harun, you will be our spy. Drat it all, you deserve it. Take your pick of companions and be gone. His voice sounded gruff, as if he were hiding his worries beneath a facade of sternness. That's finished it, Harun thought. Too late to back out now. Keep a sharp lookout. Skulk in the shadows. See without being seen, cried Bolo dramatically. In a way, you'll be a shadow warrior, too. To reach the old zone of Kahani, it was necessary to travel south through the Twilight Strip, hugging the shoreline of the land of Chup, until that dark and silent continent was left behind, and the southern polar ocean of Kahani stretched in every direction. Harun and If the Water Genie set off on this route within an hour of Harun's volunteering. Their chosen companions were the plenty maw fishes, Guppy and Baga, who bubbled along in their wake, and the gnarled old floating gardener, Molly, with his lilac lips and hat of roots. Molly walked on the water at their side. Harun had wanted to take Blabbermouth, but a shyness overcame him, and besides, she seemed to want to stay with Mudra the Shadow Warrior. And Rashid had been needed to translate Mudra's gesture language to the general and the prince. After several hours of high-speed travel through the Twilight Strip, they found themselves in the southern polar ocean. Here, the waters had lost even more of their coloring, and the water temperature had dropped even lower. We're going the right way, we can tell. Before it was filthy, now it's hell, said Guppy and Baga, coughing and spluttering. Molly loped along over the water's surface without any sign of discomfort. If that water is so badly poisoned, doesn't it hurt your feet? Harun asked him. Molly shook his head. Take more than that. Little poison, bah. Little acid, bah. A gardener's a tough old bird. It won't stop me. Then, to Harun's surprise, he burst into a little rough-voiced song. You can stop a check. You can stop a leak or three. You can stop traffic, but you can't stop me. What we are here to stop, Harun reminded him, adopting what he hoped was an authoritative, leader-like tone of voice, is the work of the cult master, Khatam Shad. If it's true that there's a wellspring or source of stories near the South Pole, suggested If, then that's where Khatam Shad will be, you can be sure of it. Very well, then, Haroon agreed. To the South Pole. The first disaster struck soon afterwards. Guppy and Baga, uttering piteous whimpering noises, confessed that they couldn't go any further. Never thought it would be so bad. We have failed you, we feel sad. I feel terrible, she feels worse. We can hardly speak in verse. The waters of the ocean were growing thicker by the mile, thicker and colder. Many of the streams of Story were full of a dark, slow-moving substance that looked like molasses. Whatever is doing this can't be very far away, Haroon thought. To the Plenty Maw fishes, he said sadly, "Stay here and keep watch. We'll go on without you." Of course, even if there is danger, they won't be able to warn us, Haroon realized. But the Plenty Maw fishes were already so miserable that he kept this thought to himself. The light was poor now. They were at the very edge of the twilight strip, very near the hemisphere of the perpetual darkness. They traveled on towards the pole, and when Haroon saw a forest standing up from the ocean, its tall growths waving in a light breeze, the absence of light added to the mystification. "Land?" Haroon asked. "Surely there's not meant to be any land here." "Neglected waters is what it is," said Molly in disgust. "Overgrown, gone to weed, run down. Nobody to keep the place in trim. It's a disgrace. Give me a year and the whole place would look like new." It was quite a speech for the floating gardener. He was plainly upset. "We haven't got a year," Haroon said, "and I don't want to fly over it. Too easy to spot. And we couldn't take you with us anyway." "Don't you go worrying about me," said Molly, "and don't be thinking about flying either. I'll clear away." And with that, he put on a great burst of speed and disappeared into the floating jungle. A few moments later, Haroon saw huge clumps of vegetation flying into the air as Molly got to work. The creatures who lived in this weed jungle rushed out in alarm. Giant albino moths, large gray birds that were all bone and no meat, long whitish worms with heads like shovel blades. Even the wildlife is old here, Haroon thought. Will there be dinosaurs further in? Well, not dinosaurs exactly, but the water-dwelling ones? That's right, ichthyosaurs? Ichthyosaurus? The idea of seeing an ichthyosaur's head poking out of the water was both scary and exciting. Anyhow, they are vegetarians, were vegetarians, he comforted himself, at least I think so. Molly strode back across the water to give a progress report. Bit of weeding, bit of pest control, have a channel ready in no time. And back in he went. When the channel was clear, Haroon directed Butt the Hoopoe to enter. Molly was nowhere to be seen. "Where have you got to?" Haroon called. "This is no time for hide-and-seek." But there was no reply. It was a narrow channel with roots and weeds still floating on the surface, and they were deep inside the heart of the weed jungle when the second catastrophe occurred. Haroon heard a faint, hissing sound, and an instant later saw something enormous being thrown in their direction, something that looked like a colossal net. A net that had been spun out of the darkness itself. It fell over them and held them tight. "It is a web of night," said Butt the Hoopoe usefully. "A legendary Chupwala weapon. Struggle is useless. The more you fight, the harder it grips. Our goose, I regret to inform you, is cooked." Haroon heard noises outside the web of night, hisses, little satisfied chuckles. And there were eyes, too, eyes staring through their net, eyes like mudras, with blacks instead of whites. But these eyes were not so friendly in the least. And where was Molly? "Oh, so we're prisoners already," Haroon fumed. "Some hero I turned out to be."